This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. It's Thursday today, and I forgot my recorder at home. So I got home. We had small groups. We're done with small groups. It's, I don't know, 8:30 at night. And I'm just going to drive around a little bit, drive back home. But all is well. All is well. It's been a good week. We've got some good things accomplished. Things are puttering along. So we launched that new website last week. And so we've been cleaning up a little dust in the corners, as always. Doesn't look like the recorder is quite straight here, so I'm going to straighten it up a little bit. As always, cleaning up a little dust in the corners, things we weren't expecting, things that slipped through that need to be taken care of. So this was done pretty quickly, so it wasn't tested as exhaustively as needed to be. But you know what? It's fine. It's fine. We're getting things taken care of and getting them cleaned up and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we be fine. People are using it. They're getting done what they need to get done. Hey, there you go. So that's good. As far as the writing is going, the writing's a little sluggish right at the moment. But that's to be expected with everything. I had had an extra week that I was able to clock in and sort of get ahead, but then that first full week of April, including the Sunday, which was the last day of March, that was Easter Sunday, and we ran two services for Easter Sunday, and we had extra rehearsal, and I mean, it blew all of the Sunday by the time we got done with Sunday meal. And then once you're down 3,000 words, it's pretty hard to get recovered on that. So that was last week. And then this week, the books came in. And so I mailed those on Sunday, got them packaged up, ready to mail on Sunday. And then Monday, of course, was the eclipse, the total eclipse, which we went down to Poplar Bluff to see, which was spectacular. I mean, it's just spectacular. It's just, oh man, you know, I pulled out my phone at one point, tried to get a picture, and it just wasn't happening, and I just said, put away your phone, just sit here and stare at it, stare at the glory of God. Because that was the verse that kept going over and over in my head. You know, the heavens declare the glory of God. Because the tolerances to make that work to where you could see the corona, but it blotted out enough of the sun that you could see the corona and not blot out the corona, and not, because even when it's at like 98%, it's still bright enough to see during the day and you can't look at it. And then it hits that diamond ring and it's still this pinpoint bright. And it's so interesting during that time because it's like there's a spotlight on everything. I mean, it's very sharp shadows. And then when the diamond ring disappears and it goes, it is spectacular. And I was reminded again, I was talking to a friend about this today, I was reminded again how that God, when he builds things, does not necessarily build them for functional perfection. He builds them for narrative perfection. And what I mean by that is that he builds things in such a way that they embody story. And by embodying story, it actually clues us in on how to live life. So I was talking to a friend today and gave him you know, this example of the optic nerve. So your optic nerve goes through your retina to exit the back of the eyeball. And in the process of doing that, it means there's a section of your retina in your eye that you can't perceive light through. You can't activate the rods and cones in that section. And people have pointed to that and have said, oh, see, that proves that there's no designer, because no one would screw up a design that bad. Because there's no point that if a designer was doing this, what he'd do is he'd make something that was perfect, and it's no, because God has designed things not for functional perfection, but for narrative perfection. The fact that that optic nerve does that, penetrates through the retina and covers up a section, means that we have a blind spot. That we actually have a blind spot, but we have two eyes and our eyes compensate for it. So not only do we have blind spots, we are not aware of our blind spots. But if you close one eye and you work hard enough on it, you can find the blind spot. Well, so why would God do that? Because that analogy of a blind spot is so apropos to how our minds work. Because of our ego and because of our flesh, it is so easy for us to develop mental blind spots. So easy for us to develop those. And that physical nature of our eyes, we have a physical example of what that mental process is like. It's a narrative. And if you recognize that you have an optical, physical blind spot, you can directly translate that narrative to your life, and it becomes, I should pay attention to the things that I might be missing. And I should think about, what could I be missing? And that's really valuable, as far as I'm concerned. Because it gives us something to hook the back of our brains on, so that when we get too convinced, you know, of our capabilities, that... Anyways, so... as far as the writing goes, well, yeah, so we went down for the eclipse, obviously. So I packaged up all the books, got them mailed on Monday morning. Then we hopped in the cars, went down for the eclipse. 3.5 hours down, driving to Poplar Bluff, right on the line. So we had a 4-minute eclipse and had a lovely place to stay. My son-in-law, the pastor of our church, had called down to a pastor friend of his down there and asked if we could come to the church. He, you know, kind of slipped him a little bit of money as a thank you. And so we had access to their bathrooms. And I mean, it was ideal. It was just ideal. There were actually some people from Michigan who were kind of parked out there as well. So I got a chance to talk to them a little bit. So it was fun. Took 5.5 hours coming back because the main highway going across the bottom of Missouri is Highway 60. And a lot of people had gone down to through Highway 60 and then branched off into a lot of the smaller little towns around there to get off the beaten path. Well, then, of course, afterwards, everybody was feeding back into those dinky little roads, and the police were trying to help them through, and of course, that just clogged up the main highway, and so it took us 5.5 hours coming back, but, you know, all in all, not too bad. It just really was
not too bad.
I have marked my calendar, because... The next one in the continental United States is 2044, but that's only up in Montana. But in 2045, it's coming through here again. So it's going to almost be the same track that it was in 2017. It's very, very close to that track. So it's Tulsa is going to be good. Russellville, Arkansas is going to be good again. Mount Magazine, which I think I mentioned that last week, that I was really thinking about Mount Magazine because it faces west. There's bluffs. There's, you know, so who knows? Maybe this next time we'll just rent some rooms at Mount Magazine Lodge and we'll just view the eclipse from there. So we'll see. It's on a Saturday. It's August the 12th, 2045. I will be 86 at that point. So, yeah. At noon. It's coming through at noon. So, you know, got it on the calendar. It's only 21 years away. So, which, that's not really that long, you know. And all things being good, I expect to be in good spirits and good health in 2045. So, that's the next goal. See the next total eclipse, and this time rent a room at Mount Magazine. So that was all fun. That was all fun. But it did throw off the writing schedule, and you know, I'm okay. I just have to be to 20,000 words by this weekend, but I'm already over 17,000, almost 18,000. I have 2 days. That's normally 4,500 words worth of writing. It's fine. I'm going to be fine. At the same time, I am working on the Bugs Bunny costume, trying to figure out what I'm doing. I think I've got the rest of it worked out. It's just a matter of implementing now, but I am down now to, this is the 10th, and so I'm down to 2 weeks now. It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow. So I really need to make some really, really good headway on the jacket this weekend. And then if I can make some really, really good headway on the jacket this weekend, the tuxedo jacket, then, you know, I just have to make the front plate, which is kind of supposed to be a shirt. I have to make the front plate. And I gotta make the collar, and I gotta make the bow tie, and some wrist cuffs. And then, ta-da! And then I have to decide what other little things I'm actually going to make. I might make... You can get little terrible, they're just terrible, Looney Tunes paper block things that you can print out and fold together and I might get some of those because supposedly they were going to redo the famous cartoon Rhapsody Rabbit, in which Bugs Bunny plays the piano. They were going to do a whole series of them, the musical ones. So, you know, they were going to do the what was the operatic one called? I can't remember what it was called. I watched it. What's Opera Doc? I think that's what it was called. What's Opera Doc? Was the Wagnerian one where Bugs Bunny played the Viking maiden. And then the one where Bugs Bunny played the piano, which is also one of the commemorative stamps, was Rhapsody Rabbit, it was called. And I thought that was cute because I could turn that name into something for an origami play because I could call it Rhapsody Rabbit, except it would be W-R-H-A-S-O-D, Rhapsody, as in Rhapsody. So that's all good. That costume's going fine. I think it's going to be okay. I think I've got it all worked out. Pretty sure I've got it all worked. Just plowing forward. So I got to do some folding tonight, folding, because I came up short six panels. So I got to build out six panels. Those all take about 20 minutes a piece, so I can get started on them tonight. And I really need to put a few words down tonight. I just need to put down a few words tonight, which I'm in an easy passage. I should be able to get that done fairly easily. So I just got to get this recorded, then I got to get it uploaded, then I got to put down those words, then I got to do some folding, and that'll be tonight. Tomorrow should be fun with the costumes. It should be fun. It's going to be International Moment of Laughter Day, and I wanted just something for International Moment of Laughter. And it's really interesting how Jesus works. I can't even remember the details of it, but I distinctly remember 2 or 3 weeks ago that I had this vague nudge about, wouldn't it be funny to be one of those wavy dancers? And I didn't even look up to see if there was a costume. I assumed there was a costume for it. One of those, you know, wavy dancers that has the fan. And I thought, oh, that'd be fun to do something like that. Well, then I realized I had this extra slot that I could switch it over to International Moment of Laughter. And I thought, well, maybe I should get one of those. So I looked around. I found one. I got it in. I put it on. It is hysterical. It is just... it is hysterical. So that's tomorrow. So I would think people will enjoy that. So we'll see. We'll see. So I got that all worked out, so that'll be fine. And like that. So that's all good. Writing's good. Costumes are good. I have been trying to figure out with the costumes how I would make a half sphere LED screen without breaking the bank so that I could make a Marvin the Martian costume. And I came across a DIY LED panel thing where this guy got all of these LEDs and soldered them all together and then put some kind of Arduino controller on it. So who knows? Maybe that's the solution. Maybe I just get myself a translucent sphere and, you know, put the LEDs on the inside so that they kind of blur a little bit. I don't know. I may try something like that. We'll see. I don't really know how to make all the controller stuff work, but there are controllers to do that sort of thing. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, once I get this costume done, I'll be good until, I think, if I do Marvin the Martian, I think that's not until June or July, I think. Maybe August. And there's not really a Marvin the Martian costume or National Day, but there's like the first time he appeared in a cartoon or something, and I can make that work. You know, I should have enough time to, like, manufacture something out. We'll see. The actual Marvin the Martian costume is really not that hard. I mean, it's a red bodysuit and then just some EV foam panels painted green. Should be fine. Whoa, I am way off here. Just a second. Anyways, this week in our continuing saga of atheists who are speaking kindly about Christianity, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it was really fascinating to listen to Jordan Peterson, Brent Weinstein discussing religious things and how that, you know, we seem to be having more of these proclaimed atheists that are singing the praises. And then, of course, you know, last week we talked about Richard Dawkins all of a sudden coming out and saying that he considers himself a cultural Christian and how he really enjoys all the hymns and, you know, he enjoys the Christmas story and, you know, he doesn't believe per se, but he's kind of a cultural Christian and he really appreciates those things, and he certainly wouldn't want to live in a country that that wasn't Christian based. It's like, okay. Well, this week I came across a clip, 15-minute clip, and you know, I'll just go through this quickly because, like I said, I've got to go put down a few words and then get this done and get that done. So this was from Eric Weinstein being interviewed by Chris Williamson in one of the latest podcasts they were doing. And Eric Weinstein got to talking about religion. Chris Williamson was saying, you know, the world is a confusing place. It's hard to make sense. We don't know what's real. We don't know what isn't. We don't know if we can trust the information we're getting that's in front of our eyes. And we don't know if we can trust the people that are all around us. Do they have our best interests at heart? How do we make sense of the world? And Chris said, you know, religion provided a pretty good tool for that. And I'm not sure whether it's possible to be a cultural Christian or a cultural Muslim or a cultural Jew. I wonder how important the belief bit is to the religion bit. And so here's Chris Williamson struggling with what's happening in the world and looking for an anchor and talking about there's certain things that are appealing about religion, but can you just, as Richard Dawkins said, be a cultural version of this and gain some of the benefit without having to make the commitment? And it was interesting because, just real quickly, Eric Weinstein began to riff on religion. And he started talking about music and the Western scale. And he pointed out that the Western scale, just the descending major scale, da 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 dum. So, okay, ba da 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 dum. That's just a descending major scale. But if you put the pauses in it, bum 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 bum, you know, all of a sudden it's Joy to the World. And how that religion has given us these extremely memorable, iconic tunes. And he was talking about how the power of music and the power of religion to unite and divide people. He was talking about being on a car train going from Bulgaria to Kyiv. And he said there were all these Siberian miners. And he said, I brought my harmonica with me, and they had a transistor radio. And at some point, the radio gives out, and they want to drink and dance because this is their holiday. And they start getting really rowdy. And I realized I had the ability to make music, so I pulled out my harmonica, and I began playing some blues, and everybody's dancing and having a good time. And there, you know, he said, they keep telling me more and more, and he said, I'm starting to paralyze because I don't have much of a repertoire. And he said, the last thing I want to do is, you know, offend these guys. He said, so I start playing Jewish songs. And he said, a woman comes up to me and grabs me by the lapel and says in Russian, where do you know this from? And he said, I suddenly realize that I'm in an anti-Semitic environment and I think I've got a Siberian miner who recognize that I'm playing Jewish music and I'm terrified and I'm paralyzed and I don't know. He said, so I pretend I don't understand her Russian. He said, and then she reaches into her bosom and she pulls out this giant Star of David and she's looking me right in the eye and she's saying, I know you know me. You know, in that moment, religion, takes these two people from completely different environments and unites them. It's amazing power. So, you know, Chris quoted Dan Brown's Angels and Demons, where Tom Hanks is speaking to the Collegno, and he's trying to get access to the Vatican archives, and the guy asks him, "Do you believe?" And he starts giving some political answer, and he said, "I didn't ask you that. He said, I asked you if you believed." And Dan Brown says, "I don't believe we all have the gift of faith." Oh, wait. And he looks him straight and he says, "Faith is a gift I have yet to be given." That's what he says in the movie. And then Eric Weinstein comes back and he says, "I don't believe it. We all have the gift of faith. What we don't have is the ability to sustain it. We don't have the ability to import it into all quadrants of our minds." And he's saying, "Look, I'm saying that I'm an atheist. I don't believe in the stories about the deity, but that's not constant. You flit in and out." And then he started talking about music. And in all of this talking, Eric Weinstein is really saying, look, there is something ineffable about all of this. There is something here. And one thing that was really fun is after he got talking about all of the music and the different things, he started illustrating how that Christianity, specifically the Bible, the Judeo-Christian belief system, has integrated so much into our culture that you don't even realize how deep it is. And he says, I'm trying to think, and they get to talking about Latin. Anyway, so then he goes on to one point. And he talks about how religion is so integral into our lives. Let's see, where is everybody? Oh. So, he said, you know, you're all standing around and you're talking about all the firings at a given company and someone says, well, the handwriting was really on the wall. He said, and people don't know anymore that that's Daniel. It's straight out of the Bible. That's Daniel. And he quotes right out of the things. And he said, you know, we have these songs, pop songs, and you about the birds and everything, turn, there is a season. Well, that's Ecclesiastes. And Jimi Hendrix goes off about the two riders that were approaching, the wind began to howl. Well, that's Isaiah. You know, he just went through one after another, after another, after another, showing that religion has worked its way into every aspect of our lives. And he ended, Eric Weinstein, the atheist, ended with this observation. Religion is interested in you whether or not you give a blanket blank. Whether or not you give a blah, blah, it knows. Give a blah, blah. We'll just leave it there. It knows about you. And it finds its way into every aspect of your life. And if you're going to be an honest atheist, you have to admit that. So here's Eric Weinstein, this brilliant man, looking at his experience in life. And he's saying, yeah, there's a foundation in my life that I cannot deny. And it is this Judeo-Christian ethic. So it's really interesting. It's just really, really interesting. Anyways, got stuff to do. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.